My advice to you, start drinking heavily.
This is Commander's HQ. My name is Nate. With me is Alex.
Yo, yo.
Nick is not with us again tonight. He just had schoolwork or something. I don't know. I'm pretty sure he'll be with us soon. But how was your week, Alex?
Good. Really good, actually. I went to a bed and breakfast, did a murder mystery dinner, and had real fun. I was not the murderer, if anybody's asking. And I wasn't the guy who died either. Played some really good games of EDH.
That's cool.
Learned some new rulings with Prowess.
New rulings of Prowess. What's up with Prowess rulings?
I had a problem with the Prowess trigger on gods.
Yeah.
Does the Prowess trigger go off when a god comes into play? Because
they're not a creature. Yeah.
It's not a creature. Well, it. This is the ruling that at an actual level, what one judge said. Since it comes into play and it checks.
Yeah.
It checks as a creature.
Oh, yeah, because it's a type on the card.
Yeah, so it doesn't trigger as a non-creature spell.
Okay.
So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Anything else?
Not really.
Oh, what did I do this week? I made a Zozu deck. Everyone knows that I made it. I've showed everyone the list. But it is failing to do something. Failing to lose. I built the deck on the idea of having it fail. But I have played the deck 14 times, and it has won 8 out of 14 times I've played the deck. It's really, really dumb. So, I don't know. It's just kind of on pause. As I was saying, sorry, yeah, interruption there. I built the deck to fail, and it doesn't fail. Had a really, really good game, though, where I was playing Plane Chase, which I never play because I hate Plane Chase. But we did a 5-player Plane Chase game. One of my friends was like, you know, I got to play Plane Chase with you once. So I decided, fine, I'll just bite the bullet and do it. And I did. And instead of losing, the deck won. Grant, and I, the conclusion I've come to with that deck, I think the reason why it wins so much is the fact that I'm doing so very little that everyone else doesn't realize what I'm doing, because it stays under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's why.
Yeah.
It's just, it stays under the radar. Nobody really pays attention to what I'm doing, and when I do damage, it just kind of, like, it's one or two little hits here and there, so everyone lets it go. So,
did you put a Basilisk collar in there yet?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Okay.
Basilisk, I got Whammer Hammer in there too. Otherwise, it was Loxodon Warhammer.
Yeah.
The thing with those two, which makes it good, is just the fact that when I lay mana, I don't get hurt, but I gain life when everyone else is laying land because it deals damage. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. I like the deck. I think this is going to be one I'm going to keep together just because it's so stupid good.
It was an accident.
It was a complete accident that worked out in my favor.
Yeah.
So, the funny thing is, every time I win with this deck, it's always something weird. Like one time, obviously, somebody scooped. Another time, it was war. I killed somebody just off of a warp world with Ankh of Mishra hitting the board. With all that stuff going on. It's just stupid. But yeah, it's pretty cool. Other than that, what else have I done? My son's getting better at Pokemon, and I've been playing a little bit of Pokemon with him. I'm going to get my ass kicked on that now.
Traitor.
No, I'm not traitor. I'm just playing both games. But other than that, I started my new job at 8-Bit. Now I'm living the true nerd life. I work at a card shop, and I work at a vintage video game shop. Yeah, so...
If I didn't work so many hours where I work right now, I would love to work. I would have... Brandon asked me if I wanted to work there, and I was like,
I want to so bad.
I would love to.
Granted, it's not like the hours aren't the greatest because like I only get 20 hours a week, but it's better than what I got right now, which is nothing. So I think I'm just gonna work something else into my schedule, and I'll just end up finding a way to. I'm gonna work out whatever with the other place I'm working and see if I can't do all three. So we'll figure it out. But other than that, I got nothing new. As I said, Nick isn't with us tonight. He is busy doing work or something like that, so I don't know.
He got a job.
He got a job.
Job sucks.
Yeah. Don't do that. Just kidding.
So win the lottery.
Win the lottery, you're good.
You know.
But
figure out the algorithm.
Yeah.
Win the lottery.
But not much on the news. Like, there hasn't been much news out really.
Actually, there has been a little news. Tiny Leader is taking
Yes,
off.
It is. Tiny Leader is getting huge. Did you go to the practice session at all at the Zone?
No.
They were doing a grind session last Saturday that unfortunately I missed. I wanted to go to.
When was the grind session?
They were doing a all evening. They were doing Tiny Leader's grind sessions.
Oh, Saturday evening?
Yeah, last Saturday evening, but I was busy.
I must have been after I left.
Yeah, I was busy, so.
Some of the weirdest cards have been like that new, what is it called, Heroes Mask?
Yeah, or the Heroes Blade?
No, not the Heroes Blade. It's the one where if it's a legend, you just auto-equip and it's
+2/+2. That mask. Yeah, it gets +2/+2, and if it's legendary, it has hexproof.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a 3-drop scary thing. It's pretty cool.
A 3-drop, but it takes like 4 to equip like the Hero's Blade.
Yep, but it instantly makes any Tiny Leader, which has a low power level, insanely bigger than everything else on the board.
Yep, and right now, and it's, you know, it's a triggered ability. Active. So, yeah, it is a triggered ability.
Yeah. I have one in here.
You do?
Yeah.
You actually own a commander, if one from the commander?
Yeah, it's called Champions something or other. Champion's Helm.
Oh, Champion's Helm.
Champion's Helm. 3 to cast, 1 to equip. It's 3, 1 to equip. Equip creature gets +2/+2, and if the equipped creature is legendary, it has hexproof.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was only built for commander. That is it.
Yeah.
It only exists in commander.
It's like, it went up on MTG stock like 150%.
Yeah, it was cheapo. Not anymore.
Yeah, Tiny Leaders is really starting to explode.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of, at first, not too happy about the format. Like, I thought it would be cool, but like, I built my first 2 builds, didn't like it. Found a build I like now. I haven't had a chance to test it out, but every time I have solitaired it out, it is ridiculously dumb. I end up with, I think out of all the times I've actually played the deck now, and I actually just solitaired it out, I'm sitting by turn 3, I think it is, I'm sitting on like 5 or 6 answers in my hand to everything.
Yeah, right now I'm building a Dredge Scavenge.
That should be interesting.
Well, I'm using Varez.
Oh, yeah, Volrez the Troll or whatever.
Yeah, where he gives everything in your graveyard.
Yep.
And then you got,
And he also has his own built-in scavenge. You stack a creature, regenerate him.
Mm-hmm.
So you can stack a creature, regenerate him, and then scavenge him out to draw that. It makes him one more time.
Yeah, but you also need, like, the Phyrexian Dreadnought, Phyrexian Devourer.
Oh, yeah.
The Phyrexian, well, yeah, then there's the, I keep on forgetting that, the one black 13-13.
Yeah, the shadow. Yep, the shadow, yeah, like shadow, Death Shadow or something like that.
Yeah, Death Shadow.
Yeah.
Where it's a 13-13 and gets -1/-1 for each point of health you have or your opponent has.
So I think it's your opponent, but virtually when you play it first turn, it dies right away. And then you pay 1, and it's huge.
Yep.
And he's huge.
Then you play, like, Whisper Soul Cloak.
Yeah.
So your one creature is indestructible or unblockable.
How do you feel about Doomsday, though?
Doomsday is a broken card because that is an, you basically remove your library for all except five cards.
Your win con. Your instant win con.
Yeah, you get to basically tutor your combo, and you it's a one-shot deal. If somebody screws with it, you're done.
Basically, if ideally if you play it outright, you can do it first turn. You go Swamp, Dark Ritual.
Yep.
Swamp, Dark Ritual. Maybe before you play that, you have Lotus Petal in your hand just to go further.
Mm-hmm.
So Swamp, Dark Ritual, Lotus Petal, and...
Okay.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
Okay, well, I've already seen one guy do it. It was first turn, Memnarch, Culling of the Weak, and Dark Rit.
Yeah, so he just ran the crap out of his...
He had six black mana first turn.
Wow, what'd he play to win, though?
What he did next was he Doomsdayed.
Yeah.
With three of the black mana. Then he took the other black mana, played a Priest of Gix, which gave him another three black mana, which he turned into a Basalt Thrall, and the other black mana just he couldn't use.
Yeah.
But he did all these shenanigans first turn. The next turn, I laid a land, and I played an Elf.
He's like, hey, I did a bunch of stuff already.
And then the following turn, he laid an island, another island. And then it was Laboratory Maniac.
He Laboratory Maniac won because he doesn't have a...
Yeah, then he used his Brainstorm. Since there was only two cards left, he couldn't draw three.
That's dumb. That is so dumb, Tars.
He drew into his win con.
Wow. That's dumb. That is so, so dumb.
Yeah, it took three turns to win, but his first turn was big.
Oh, God, yeah. But here's the thing with a deck like that. You really have to have the right opening hand to make that work. Because you don't get to mull that. You're stuck with it.
Yeah, I saw Culling of the Weak, and I'm like... That card hasn't existed since Exodus.
Yeah.
That card is about 15, 20 years old.
Oh, God, yeah. It's just a two-drop Dark Rit. It's a
one-drop
Dark Rit, but if there's a creature, says it, there's a creature.
You played Culling of the Weak, that's why you played the Memnite first.
Yeah, sack the creature.
Sack the creature.
To make more mana. That's dumb.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, he emptied out his hand.
Oh, my God.
I mean, all seven cards in his hand were dropped.
Yeah, but that falls into the territory of gambling, because if somebody interrupts that, like, in my deck, I play the pay two life and counter a spell. If they can't counter it, pay one.
Mm-hmm.
That hurts, because that really slows them down, I think, a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Days.
Days would just wreck that, too.
Manatize.
Because now all that mana is going elsewhere and not where you want it to. So that's kind of dangerous. Especially after you let him Doomsday off before you do it. Because that's just mean.
What are you supposed to do first turn when you haven't even gotten your turn yet?
Yeah.
It's like Force of Will.
Yeah.
You're cheating.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. Like, yeah, I'm actually looking forward to it. I think Chatton did announce the first Tiny Leaders were going to do it in, I think you said April? Or end of March, something like that.
It's going to be a tournament?
Yeah. We're actually going to do a tournament. And I think he said something like April or March. He wasn't sure which one yet. But either way, it's coming up.
Yeah.
So I think I might have to physically start testing or something.
I'm wondering if they're going to do a standard Tiny Leaders, a modern Tiny Leaders.
I think that would be cool. Well, maybe not, because... What do you have in standard? That's three and under for legendary creatures to use.
You got all the new ones. You got Shun Yun.
You got Alesha.
And
I kind of want to make Alesha. If I make another Tiny Leader, I think I'm going to make Alesha.
Yasova.
You got Yasova. You got. Yeah, but here's my thing on the whole standard. You're really looking at a small list of legendaries. That's going to be like less than 10 cards if you include Theros. I guess Theros you get more.
Yeah.
But what do you play with that? It's all 3 and under. I really think you're scraping the bottom of the barrel. Mm-hmm. I think it's more realistic and modern than standard.
Yeah. And you have to also look at it this way, too, with even if you go modern.
Yeah.
You're still going to miss out on a few, one for Grixis.
Yeah.
Tassau, I think his name is, Tassau, from Legends.
Yeah.
And then you're going to lose out on Angus McKenzie.
I'm not heartbroken by that.
Me neither.
I hate Angus McKenzie. I don't like Angus McKenzie in regular EDH. I don't think I would actually like him in Tiny Leaders.
Well, the funny thing is with Angus McKenzie in Tiny Leaders...
Yeah.
He actually matters.
Yeah, he does.
Your generals have to play a part in your deck. Like in EDH, in normal EDH, your general doesn't have to take part.
Yeah.
You're basically looking for combos to kill everybody off in one fall swoop. It may involve your general, but I mean, I don't know if it's...
You don't need to. Like, how many Sliver Queen decks have we seen that have nothing to do with Sliver Queen?
I have not run into a deck that didn't... If it had Sliver Queen... Well, yeah, Garrett has a couple decks where each...
Sliver Queen doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter.
No. But then there are some people who do run Sliver decks with the Sliver Queen.
Yeah, well, that...
Then it's...
Just if you don't count the Sliver Queen deck there. I mean... You can play five color good stuff and play Sliver Queen and do whatever the heck you want. Like, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It really doesn't. But yeah, I don't know. Tiny Leaders is getting a lot of press and a lot of excitement. It's kind of crazy.
I'm just getting, like, the Yosova decks. I've seen two Yosova decks that are just crazy. It's borderline Yosova Voltron.
Yeah.
And they'll use, like, called. Blood. Taste of blood.
Taste of blood?
Yeah. Where it gets +4/-4.
Yeah.
Bloodlust. My bad. Bloodlust. One red, one other target creature gets +4/-4. It can't go below 1 toughness.
Yeah.
But they'll use that on Yosova to give him a +8 to take control of something.
Yeah.
Because there's not a lot of stuff in Tiny Leaders that goes over 5.
You don't have, like, board wipes in general, though. There's not much in Tiny Leaders. You got the Oblivion Stone.
You got Oblivion Stone. You've got,
Doomsday really doesn't. That just affects you.
That affects you. Forced March, 3/X, destroy everything.
Yeah.
Converted mana cost to X or less. There's 2 white ones.
Yeah, there's not much. It really isn't. So, if you're one of those players that always relies on board wipes, this format, you're going to be hurting.
Uh-huh.
You're really, really hurting. So, that's kind of cool. But, that's pretty much all that for news, really. It's just Tiny Leaders is exploding. It's everywhere. Yeah. So, I mean, Capped Out has even recognized it as a legitimate format now.
Well, yeah, and I think they should because... Since WotC decided that you can play any format for Friday Night Magic.
Yeah.
I mean...
I think that's EDH's in for Friday Night Magic, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I mean, what was it? This last Thursday, there was, I think Chatton said 40 people or 35 people showed up.
For Friday Night Magic?
Yeah, or not Friday Night Magic, for EDH Thursday night.
Yeah, for EDH, we had like... close to 30 people at the store.
It was more than 30.
Yeah, it was crazy. I was there.
Yeah, when I got there, almost every table.
Yeah, every table is full of players.
Yeah, I mean...
It was crazy.
It's like a dream come true for a Magic player.
If you're like EDH, yeah.
Yes. I mean, see that many casual players just show up at one spot... You know, it's just a good time.
Yeah. I mean, I have nothing against standard players and all them who want to compete and stuff. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But as a whole, I think Magic was out before competitive became the thing. Magic was always a tabletop thing. Always has been. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was a tabletop thing. They went through that phase where competition was everything and tabletop fell off the map.
Yep.
Okay, then we have our commander format comes up, and now it is probably, I want a standard, I think standard is still a big thing,
mm-hmm.
but commander, I almost want to say, is bigger.
Yeah, I mean, with commander, it's just a stress-free environment. You're just out there, and you get to play cards that you normally don't get to play.
Yeah.
Like, Modern right now is becoming a very expensive...
It's the new Legacy and Vintage format is what it is.
It's so expensive to try, even to get into. I mean, but, I mean, most of the cards in Modern are still affordable.
Yeah.
But it ain't going to be for much longer.
Oh, God, yeah.
And they're going to have to change to the Modern format. Like, half the list is going to have to go to Vintage or Legacy. And then they're going to have to change the rest of Modern.
Yeah.
So.
Yo. What were we talking about? yeah, sorry, we've had interruptions tonight.
yeah, this is fun.
Yeah. But no, EDH as a whole has just gotten big. And
yeah,
it's here to stay, folks. If you're in another format and not liking Commander, I think we're going to be around for a while as a Commander group.
Yeah.
We're not going anywhere. Because, like, when I was at Con of the North, I was doing Legendary. And all the times I brought it out to play, every single one that really got into the game the most were Magic players. Every single one of them said they were Commander players. One of them, you've mentioned that they also play Tiny Leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So it's out there. It's getting big. And
yeah, all of a sudden, what was it? 3 months ago, Chatton said something about it.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, it's spreading like wildfire.
Yeah. It's pretty sweet. But speaking of EDH, Sheldon Menery, today's article was actually brought up by Chatton from the Fan Zone, so shout outs to him.
Mm-hmm.
Our main topic tonight is an article that Sheldon Menery put out. It's called, the article's called The Can't Get Angry All-Stars and Editions. Basically, he goes into this article is how he explains how EDH is just a format of big bombs. And he's done this at this article quite a few times, but he just expanded on the list. And there's a lot of cards on here. We're not going to go over all of them, but there's some pretty good comments in here. There's cards in Magic that are just, when they're destroyed, most of the time nobody cares. Because everybody just hates these cards.
Yep.
And in past episodes, we have talked more than once on how much we hate Deadeye Navigator, or how much we hate, you know, certain cards, and Conjurer's Sphinx, all that. But it's a pretty good article. I haven't actually got to skim through this article, but it brings up a few good points here. Sheldon Menery put up a few points in here that were worth talking about. He talked about how everyone talks about that ban list. What's going to get put on the ban list next? This, that, whatever. And he pretty much plainly puts in this article how he names all the big cards everybody hates. And says, you know what? They're good, but they're not broken, and they're here to stay.
Yep.
He really, I think if anyone was wondering if Deadeye Navigator was going to go away, or Conscript Sphinx, or anything like that, he pretty much answers that question pretty clear in here, saying they're here to stay. So, deal with it.
Well, yeah, and that's something I had to learn, and it's still one of those things that you have to learn about EDH, is you have to learn to deal with it.
Yeah.
If you don't have the cards to deal with specific decks, yeah, you're going to lose. I'm sorry for being a broken record, but you can't be a solitaire deck and win. Maybe if you're a Pillow Fort deck, you can solitaire out. But any other time, I mean, you should have answers at all times.
Just right off the list, we're just going to go into some of them here. Academy Runes. It's basically it's just a really good card. Artifacts keep coming back. Here's the big one on the list, and this is one I like. He does mention it. Deadeye.
Mm-hmm.
Deadeye is on this list.
Avison.
And just looking at everything on this list, Elish Norton's on the list. Go figure. Mm-hmm. Deadeye and Abier. But the big thing that I'm seeing on this list, and it's funny because my Zozu deck actually plays two of them. I have Grip of Chaos and Confusion in the Ranks on here. I understand why Confusion in the Ranks and Grip of Chaos would be a problem for people. Another one here. Price of Glory. First of all, when it comes to these cards, the fact that I play Zozu, I'm going to come out right now. If any, War's Toll. Oh, wow. A lot of Zozu cards are in here. First of all, if you're ever playing Price of Glory and someone wants to say you're being a jerk, keep in mind, this is how Price of Glory reads. Whenever a player taps a land for mana during another player's turn, destroy that land. If you're controlling Price of Glory, you're not choosing to destroy that land. The person who is tapping their land to counter a spell is deciding to destroy their own land.
Yep.
It's just an enchantment. It's warning you. If you do this, if you play anything to when it's not your turn, you're going to pay for it.
Then they got all five swords.
Yeah, that one I don't agree with. Like, I think...
Oh, that, especially with Narset?
Yeah, I agree with it and I don't because, like... They're swords. They are not indestructible. They can be shattered just as easy.
Well,
they're
yeah.
not hard to get rid of.
But the thing is, trying to get to those answers. You know,
yeah.
Like the sword of with fire and ice.
Yeah.
That just gets stupid quick.
Yeah.
The other one, which is my favorite, Sword of Feast and Famine.
Sword of Feast and Famine, I think, is the best one.
Yeah, untap all your lands?
Yeah, you pretty much get a second turn within a turn.
Yep.
That's really good.
What is it? Whenever a equipped creature deals combat damage to that player, discard a card, and you untap all your lands.
Yeah, you get an extra turn within a turn. That's ridiculous.
And I can see those swords being ridiculous in time
leaders. But here's the thing, and this is the thing, and from what I read in this article, Sheldon Menner even points out. If you're going to let these cards on the field, you're going to lose. And if you're going to let a card stay on the field, especially the ones he has in this list, I hate sounding like the jerk. You probably deserve to lose.
Pretty much.
You're going to let it happen.
And if you're the person who's sitting there going, oh my god, I run most of these cards.
That's why you're being targeted.
Yeah, and I keep on losing. Is this why I'm the target?
Yeah.
Yes.
You are.
Yes, there is a thing called subtlety.
Yeah.
It has to be done to in a multiplayer format. Subtlety doesn't have to exist in a two-player game, but a multiplayer game, it's a necessity. You have to sit there and act like you're doing nothing
when
you're actually building something big.
And Sheldon Mannery brings up, and this is just quotes from the article, he brings up something like Consecrated Sphinx. Yeah, Consecrated Sphinx, you get crazy advantage. It puts you above that radar. But simply playing something like an Arcanist of the Omnipotent instead of Consecrated Sphinx gets you a decent amount of card advantage for a little bit more mana, or about the same mana cost, I believe, actually.
Arcanist is six,
and so is Consecrated Sphinx.
Yeah.
You're getting the same casting cost, and you're basically drawing three cards instead of drawing a card for everybody else's cards.
Plus you get to bounce Arcanist if...
Yeah, and you can bounce Arcanist. He protects himself. I mean, that is a situation where you're staying under the radar. You're, like drawing cards when everyone else... Drawing two cards, everybody's one card. That's way above radar.
Mm-hmm.
But just making simple adjustments to your deck like, okay, no, I'm not going to play Consecrated, and I'm going to play Arcanist Omnipotent. They're right there. You're more likely able to draw more cards because no one will go after that.
Oh, exactly.
Because they know you can bounce it back. And as long as If you're playing, and I've seen this happen, if you're playing Arcanus Omnipotence smartly, what you'll do is you'll keep the mana, you never go above the mana required to bounce him back to your hand. Mm-hmm. I've played Arcanus like that before and kept that mana open all the time, and nobody messes with them because they don't want to waste the removal on that on them.
Yep.
So, I mean,
unless they got two kill spells, which has happened before.
Exactly. But if you're bouncing, yeah, and if you're bouncing them back, that's fine. But, you know, they're going to get you eventually in that case anyway. Yeah. So, like, if the argument is, well, he had two removal spells in his hand anyway, then, yeah, that happens. That's part of the game. Sometimes it doesn't pan out, you know. He also mentions with Cabal Coffers. Yes, Cabal Coffers is ridiculous. You're the only one that doubles the mana. But simply, if you're playing Black-Red, maybe you don't go for Cabal Coffers. Maybe you play Mana Flare. You stay under the radar because you're giving everybody double mana.
You know which one they didn't put on there?
What?
The Tomb of Yawgmoth.
Tomb of Yawgmoth, yeah.
Okay. I saw a mono-white deck play Tomb of Yawgmoth.
Because you can get away with it. It's a colorless
effect. Okay, here's the great thing. You play Eldrazi Monument with the Tomb of Yawgmoth, then you play Cormispell.
Yeah.
So all your stuff is indestructible. Then you Wrath of God.
Yep, and if anyone wants to complain about that being color, it's not color. Because lands are colorless, you can do it.
And there is no mana symbol on
the land.
The land itself, so it's legitimately can be played in any color deck.
Yes, it's a little broken. Yes, but that.
Yeah, and there are like three or four creatures too that give the creature +1/+1 for each swamp your opponent controls.
Yeah,
there's a Crusader. It comes out on 4.
Yep.
Yeah, it's protection from black, and it gets +1/+1 for each swamp.
The thing I like about this article, he goes into the new additions, the newer stuff that's come up in Magic recently that's starting to become huge targets. Alright, and we talked about this before. Butcher, Malachor, Dictate of Erebos, great packs. They're huge. There's so many attrition decks in EDH right now that there's so many versions of attrition decks right now that it is just ridiculous. Like, I have seen Gava, I have seen Junk as an attrition deck. I've seen Mono Black as an attrition deck. I've seen Black Red as an attrition deck. Virtually, the possibilities for an attrition deck right now are endless. It really is endless. You basically take black and add whatever the heck color you want to it, and you can have an attrition deck.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
That good.
Yep, and it's just...
Yeah.
And, well, let's put it this way. Attrition or graveyard manipulation is going to be your two strongest points in EDH because it just makes your deck that more predictable.
Yes, and it makes your deck that much more predictable. And in my personal experiences, I did put my favorite general, Cardor, back together. And it's really, really funny with Cardor because, like, I can play Cardor... And because of Cardor's ability, you'd be surprised how many times people don't do removal spells on my creatures. Because virtually, it's a waste of time.
Oh, yeah.
Huge waste of time. Because Cardor is coming back, Cardor will bring him back. And like, and the other answer is, well, you take Cardor or you take the problem. No, you don't, because he still gets exiled. And if I have a massive amount of creatures in my graveyard, I'm just going to play him for 3 next turn. Without worrying about all that extra mana, because I have so many creatures in my graveyard, and then I'm going to play them out again, and then I'm going to play whatever creature I want anyway.
Yeah.
It's just, he's very, very good how that works. You know?
My other favorite one on this list is Soren Markov.
Soren Markov. I honestly used to have a problem with this. Back when we played EDH at my house here, it was always, you know, we always banned that card. So we didn't want anyone playing it because it was just first to go to 10. But you know what? The more I'm seeing that card, the more I'm thinking, maybe it's not that bad. Simply because when you're playing against a green-white deck, it's nice to have that stop on a green-white deck. Because green-white decks, and I know you're familiar with this, generate a lot of late game.
Yeah, they can.
Oh, God, yeah.
And even by accident, too, like my Silvala deck. Silvala, after a while, she's a workhorse, and then all of a sudden I realize I'm sitting at like 70 life.
Yeah, I'm gonna put my neck out there, and I think out of in the conspiracy set, I think Silvala is the best legendary creature that came out of that set entirely.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes and no. I mean, she does make a fun tiny leader's general.
Yeah. Well, no, I think she's the best. Like, I know Marchesa is there, and I know what she does. But Marchesa is so specific in the way of making her work that I almost think it's good, but it's where Silvala, I've seen lots of different versions of Silvala. I've seen your version. I've also seen some other versions that are just token decks. There's some just life gain versions, and then there's the token version, then there's big fatty version. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that Silvala can be played.
Well, the major thing is she's a draw engine, and she's your mana engine. You don't need as many lands as what you would normally need in a tiny leader.
And a lot of people aren't going to kill her because she's helping everybody.
Yeah, they'll keep her around until the point where they decide, well, I've drawn enough cards, I've gotten most of my combo or whatever.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah, and then just went. So yeah, I like that. So that's kind of where we're at that. This next guy, I understand people have a problem with him. He's a general. But honestly, I have seen this guy do more of a sit in an EDH game more as a referee than anything. Gaddock Teague. Numerous people complain about Gaddock Teague. He stops, you know, big battleship spells from going off, and the other person who's playing Gaddock Teague gets so much advantage. If green-white, it shouldn't have control, and the arguments are endless. But here's the thing what Gaddock Teague does, and people don't realize this. If you're one of those EDH groups that hates all that big, stupid stuff like Razia's Purification and all those big battleship spells, if you're one of those people that is really annoyed by those going off and ruining a game, and I say that in quotations, Gaddock Teague stops that stuff. Gaddock Teague will say, no, we're not doing this stupid stuff. I'm going to stop it right on the spot. That's all he does. He isn't that bad. As a whole, he's not that bad.
You still get to play your creatures and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But if you're not playing creatures and playing, like, all these non-creature spells, then, yeah, it's going to suck. But
yeah, and most, in my experiences of playing EDH, the person who usually ends up losing first is the person that's not playing enough creatures in their EDH deck. Creatures win games. More often than not, when you're playing EDH, you can have your cute combo deck, you can have your cute mill deck, you can have your cute slicker deck, you can have all of that. But when it comes down to it, what wins EDH games most of the time is just flat-out, old-fashioned swing and hitting.
Oh, yeah. Well, you look at your Bant decks, it's all your big green creatures like your Tyranids and whatever else. I mean, you got your Tyranids, it used to be your Sylvan Primordial, your Galuvian Primordial.
Yeah.
Then your White Primordial, whatever that was.
Yeah.
Remove a creature and they gain life.
Yeah, if you exile a creature from everybody's graveyard, and they gain life. It's a swords to plowshares on a stick, basically.
Yeah.
I actually play that in Cardor because it's
Luminate
Primordial. Yeah, Luminate Primordial. I play that in my Cardor deck because when I'm playing Cardor, I don't get to play cute instant answers, so I have to do everything during my turn.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do have, like, one or two ways of actually doing stuff at instant speed, but it's so hard to do.
Yeah.
And the conditions have to be right that I can't do it.
Yeah, the ETBs on creatures always do it better.
Yeah.
Will always do it better, will always do it faster, and there's more ways and effects to bring those creatures back or bounce them around, so you can do it multiple times in a turn.
And Teague is simply Teague. He's going to win the game, or the person who's playing him is going to have... I mean, Teague's not bad. I mean, creatures what wins games is what we're saying. And, yeah, Teague is on the field, but Teague stops a lot of board wipes.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be surprised how many board wipes it stops that a lot of people would get upset over. So, I mean, Teague's not as bad as he appears to be.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny, but, like, there's this one guy I was talking to. He runs a Voltron deck, and he has one... In all his Voltron decks, he runs one Memnite.
Yeah.
Just because of Ona, or Iona.
Yep.
Because, just in case, he at least has that.
Yeah, put something on.
Yeah, so he can beef it up with all his
And you don't even have to play a Memnite to do that. You can play a Darksteel Myrrh. It comes with indestructibility.
Ooh.
Darksteel Myrrh comes with indestructibility.
Mm-hmm.
It's colorless artifact. It's like a 0-3 0-1 indestructible creature.
Mm-hmm.
That just sits there for three, and that's all he is. He's 0-1 indestructible, that's all he is.
Mm-hmm.
He is screaming for, give me that sword, give me that sword, give me that armor.
Yeah.
He just grabs everything and goes, all right, let's go to town. I mean, so that's an option. I mean, every card here, like Martyr's Bond, I mean, I like that, it's scary, but again, it's, oh, what is it here? Whenever Martyr's Bond or another non-land permit you control is put in the graveyard from the battlefield, each opponent sacrifices a permit that shares the card type with it. So it's attrition for white.
Mm-hmm.
It's an enchantment. Destroy it. And if you're one of those, if you have those players like, well, I like to play black and red, I can't deal with enchantments. No, yeah, you can. You just got to play Spine of Ishta. Or mm-hmm. play the Unstable Obelisk. It's the same thing.
Yep.
I've drilled it, and even we haven't talked to him in a while, but what's his face in Endrick deck? God, why can't I remember his name?
Endrick.
Endrick deck. The guy, the creator of the Endrick deck. The budget guy. The budget deck. Hit him on the show.
Oh, I feel bad now.
I feel bad, too.
Giovanni? Not Giovanni.
No.
Ah.
But no, like, if you're playing black or red...
I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, I am too. You should be playing Spine of Ishta. It's that simple. You should be playing Spine of Ishta. If you're one of those people that complains, well, I can't deal with enchantments, you got to deal with it this game.
Igor.
Yeah, Igor. Igor said in his interview, he pushed for it. You should be playing Spine of Ishta on black or red. You just should be playing it. It's 7 mana, but... it is an answer. And if Iona's out, you're one of those people that complains about Iona, if you don't like Iona that much, go to the store and pick yourself up a playset of Spine of Ishta. It's what, the 50 cents?
Mm-hmm.
That answers Iona.
Yep.
Unless Iona's indestructible, that will answer Iona. It's destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
It's colorless. It's fine. I mean... Ever since then, that's all I run. I will run that all the time.
And it's a fairly affordable card. I think it's like $1.
It's in the
right?
Commander deck.
So, yeah, it's a bulk rare.
It's a bulk rare. It's in the Commander deck. It's a good card. Like, you should be playing it. Like, if you were that worried about enchantments, it's just that good. This one isn't really a surprise to anyone. Narset the Enlightened Master. Everyone hates this chick, hates playing her. She's very, very good. But keep in mind, she does one thing. Combo off wins, or whatever. That's all she really does. Except for Super Friends. That was a really cool mix-up.
Yeah, Super Friends Proliferate was a very interesting combo, because all of a sudden, you have, like, 6 Planeswalkers out that are able to do their ult ability and still survive.
Yeah.
On turn one.
That's ridiculous.
I couldn't believe it. He had Teferi's ult go off, Ajani, the Pride Callers go off. He was at 38 life, so there were 38 cat tokens.
Yeah.
And then he had, like, 3 others. And it was just insane. And to be honest, I mean, you can't go wrong with that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, he had Sorin. Oh yeah, he had Sorin Markov's alt go off, or no, Sorin's Sorin the Visitor.
Yeah.
So I had to sack a creature at the end of my turn. After that point, it's like, well, I'll give you the satisfaction of attacking me next turn.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, the list goes on. I mean, right, obviously there's a lot here. Nakusar. If Nick was here, he'd have tons to say on Nakusar. I think it's pretty clear if anyone listens to the show, Nick hates Nakusar. He despises Nakusar so much.
Well, there's certain people who play Nakusar. I don't have a problem.
Yeah.
But it's those other people who play Nakusar that just... They just have a way about playing it. That just rattle you.
And that comes down to the person.
Yeah.
The last thing I'm going to say about anything is Prophet of Rufix. First of all, I've never seen this guy last on the board for more than two turns. he doesn't last that long.
Yeah, as soon as it comes out on the board, it's like...
Yeah, it's gonna die.
And got an answer?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, guys. I don't have an answer. I just got rid of his, like, seaboard muse.
Yeah.
Because those two go hand in hand.
Yeah, like I've never... Even seaboard muse, like, both of them, they never last more than a few turns.
It's
and
like,
they're dead.
The funny thing is, once you see the Prophet come out, it's an immediate panic.
Yeah.
It's not just like, well, what do we do? Do we just let him have it, or...
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, like...
Out of all the cards in EDH, Prophet of Prufix has probably got to be the scariest creature to hit the table.
Yeah. Like, the one creature I'm going to mention here, and out of all this list, I'm going to go first. I'm just going to say, out of all these creatures here, there's one creature that I hate. There's one card in all of Sheldon's list, if I have to despise one of them, it's the one I despise the most. And it's got to be Vorinclex. I have so much disdain for this guy. It is not even funny. Like, and Sheldon Menner even makes mention of it. Every time Vorinclex is played, someone's got to take one for the team.
Because
Someone's land isn't untapping every turn, so someone just takes one for the team. And I'll come out and say it right now. Whenever I'm in that game, I'm usually the one that takes one for the team. But he notes in this article that it should be a regular rule of thumb in EDH. If you're the one that takes one from the team from Vorinclex, maybe you've deserved the right to be left alone for a turn.
Yeah.
So, it's like, that's just maybe you deserve the right to be left alone for a turn just because you're the one that took the hit to get rid of Vorinclex. And here's the funny thing. As good as he is, I'm surprised that more people don't play him as general, because he could. But I think a lot of people have wised up and realized that that's just a bad idea.
What's the casting cost on Vorinclex?
Eight.
That's probably why they're not using him as a general, because it's like, that's more of like a time clock for everybody else to kill you.
Well, the same thing with Jin. I've seen Jin played as a general. And I find that to be one of the funniest generals in all of EDH. You're literally putting everybody on a 10-turn clock. It's, at turn zero, it's island, go, island, go. And it's funny when you, like, I used to play Jinjai Taxis as a general back in the day. And it was funny watching everyone else at the table. We used to play our decks by starting up by the generals upside down so you can't see what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally when I play Jin, I would like stop and want to look at everyone's face and go flip it and just watch everyone's face. And you always see at least one person going, one person just kind of looks at you and they look at your general and under their breath you can just hear them mouthing the F word.
Well, yeah, it's like, well, now you have to top deck like a god, or you have to have the removal spell in your hand.
Yeah, because he's coming up, because most Jinjai Taxis decks I've seen, when I played mine, he always came out turn 10. If I didn't get him out sooner, he was coming out turn 10 every single time.
And there's only a few mana ramp cards
in blue. Yeah.
And one's, Apprentice Wizard?
Apprentice Wizard you can use, but the funniest thing I've ever done with Jin, I got him out turn 6, I think, because I played High Tide.
Yeah.
I went, I previously put like mana rocks in. Like, I think I had the diamond, and I think I had that 3-drop artifact that made a blue mana. So I was like, high tide, tap 5, doubling 10, bam, in play. And I think we were playing a 5-person game at that time, and like, 2 out of the 4 people I was playing against just immediately scooped. They didn't even want to finish it. They're just like, yep, that's a game.
Yeah. Oh, did I forget to mention he's also indestructible?
Yeah. No, I don't think he's indestructible. No, I don't think Jin's indestructible. He's he's hard to deal with. No, he's hard to deal with because he's a 5/4. And he's a flash creature. Mm-hmm. That's the scary part, because you don't even know when he's coming. Like, when he's in the deck, you kind of have a general idea of when he's coming. But when he is... Normally, if the person playing Jin is smart, they'll play him and then force out a removal and then bounce him back to your hand and then just sit there and shuffle through your keep a hand and purposely shuffle your deck.
Oh yeah,
because everyone knows that Jinjai Taxus is floating around in there somewhere. So now everyone's like, I don't know if I want to play this.
Oh yeah. Bant Flicker has always been a thing with him.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, you're going to target him? Okay, fine. You target him.
Yeah.
He disappeared. Sorry.
Yeah. No, Jinjai Taxus is scary. But yeah, he's touch and go. Like, I don't know. I guess depending on, like, but in my personal opinion, I feel if you're playing EDH, you should be playing Graveyard Shenanigans. I just feel it's just necessary.
Well, yeah, even my green-white deck and my Silvala deck, there's a lot of Graveyard Shenanigans in that.
Yeah, I just think it's necessary, because being you only get one card, one of one type, it just guarantees replayability of your deck. And it actually gains a little bit of consistency. Like, red obviously is really, really hard to get Shenanigans. But usually with red... What I've noticed with the red EDH decks, they're going for a one-hit wonder anyway.
Yeah.
They're not trying to do damage over time most of the time. They're just going for one-hit wonder.
Well, yeah. The only Graveyard Shenanigans you got now is out of that mono-red commander deck.
Yeah.
And Feldon does it wonderfully.
Yeah. I mean, you're just...
Scary wonderfully.
Yeah. You're just one-hit wondering with a red deck, so I don't even think that counts.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if you're playing black, if you're playing green, if you're playing white, if you're playing blue even to a certain degree... You should be making room for Graveyard Shenanigans. Blue does it best for instants and sorceries. Green does it best for creatures. Black does it best for creatures. And I think it's a combination of white and green. They do it best for enchantments. I mean, there's something for everybody. Green does it better for land.
Green can do it for land and creatures.
Yeah.
There are white has a few... recursion spells for the graveyard, resurrection, miraculous recovery, karmic guide.
Yep.
I mean, there are others. Red Dawnbringer.
Yeah.
I mean, the list goes on that.
Yeah.
White does have a lot of.
But I feel like if you're really into EDH, you probably should be making room for that graveyard recovery. I mean, yes, there is my graveyard gets removed. That happens. But for the most part, you should be playing it, just because who knows later on down the road, when you're playing, that you might need that spell back.
Yeah. Or if you don't, you should be playing graveyard removal.
Yeah.
And lots of it, because typically there's at least 1 to 2 people playing graveyard shenanigans, and you're going to need it.
Yeah.
You're just... going to straight up need it, because you do not want to see that Vorniclix or that Jinjai Taxus pop out of that graveyard, and you're sitting there like, okay, now I have a problem.
Yeah, and I mean, you talk graveyard recursion, green. What's the number one graveyard recursion card anyone thinks about in green? It's in every green deck ever.
Probably not mine.
Ewit.
Oh, yeah.
Ewit is in everything. Ewit used to be, believe it or not, at one time, a $20 card because of what it did. That was reprinted in Commander. It was reprinted in dual deck, versus deck.
Yeah,
there's so much of it out there. It's like it's a $3 to $4 right now.
It's
so cheap. It's just an uncommon.
Yeah, it's an uncommon. It was an F&M promo.
It was an F&M promo. I mean,
yeah, I got the F&M promo. It's beautiful.
Yeah, but it is like if you're playing green, it is the most common green card played in every green deck in EDH.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, it is so played.
It's even scarier in a flicker deck.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Because every turn or at least every round, you can bring back something of yours from graveyard.
Yeah, and keep in mind, that is probably for on a stick abilities, probably the best one ever, because it doesn't target just creatures. It targets any card in your graveyard.
Well, it's a...
It doesn't matter what it is.
It's a regrowth for one more, but you get a 2/1 creature out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing wrong with that.
No.
I mean... Yeah, for the longest time I didn't have any E-Wits, and finally I had to.
There's a reason why I have like 3 playsets of E-Wits. Because everything that's green has it. And on top of that, usually what sits right next to that E-Wit is always an Elixir of Eternity.
Immortality. I don't typically play that just because I want to keep my graveyard the way it is.
Yeah. But in a pinch, it's there. I've seen it played more than once. It's a common card. Like, these are, I almost want to say, I hate sounding like a stuck-up Magic player, but these are common-sense things. You should just be playing them. If you're in green, you should have Eternal Witness. If you're in any color where whatever your deck is, and you're worried about Graveyard Recursion, or you're worried about this, that, or anything else, you should be playing Elixir Immortality. It's just that good. It really is.
It's just an all-around good card.
Yeah.
I mean, unless your deck is doing one specific thing really fast, and the E-Wit is just going to get in the way of that, then sure, don't go with it. But,
yeah.
But otherwise, it should just be a staple, because you could have a removal card that you could say, oh, man, if I had this in my hand, if I could get that back, I could do this again.
Yep. But on this list, is there any card that Sheldon Henry has, or is there any cards that you just completely despise, like, completely?
I've looked at it. It's like, honestly, I've had to, like, mature as a Magic card player and say to myself, you know, I should be able to handle every card on this list.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. There's a lot of cards I used to hate playing against, but I think in my almost 5 years now playing EDH, I think I have come to the conclusion that most of the cards everyone hates, they don't bug me as much anymore. I started building my decks. Like, I'm playing green. Like, for instance, my junk deck. I love Cardor. He's my favorite general. I like playing those colors, and I want to play Cardor. And you know what? Darn it. Everyone knows I like playing that deck, and they always play Graveyard Recursion against me, so what should I play? I went ahead and put Hexproof Creatures in my deck.
Yeah. I mean,
I plan for that. I plan for the fact that there's going to be something that is really going to hurt my deck. I'm just going to make sure I have something for it. I'm not, like Corey said a long time ago on the show, he does not look for other players to remove stuff for him. Mm-hmm. He makes sure his deck can do something about it.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to wait for anybody else. He just goes ahead and does it himself.
Yeah. I mean, the only general that I have a fear of whenever I see her hit the board is Kalia the Vast. And
yeah.
Then I'm sitting there like, okay, it's a countdown until Master of Cruelties comes out with her, and I have no answer.
In my experiences with Kalia, I think I've done the math now because I've played Kalia enough. If you can get her out of a game, if you can kill her or remove her or do something to get her back to the command zone more than 5 times, the chances that player is going to win has gone down dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
As if you just got to knock Kalia out like 5 or 6 times, and it gets so expensive for her to be played that you're... The person playing Kalia will usually do one or two things. They'll either completely give up and scoop because they no longer have the mana to keep playing her, or they start they're going to gut it out, and they start actually playing their creatures. And if they have to play those big bomb demons, angels, and dragons, one at a time, those angels and dragons are not that hard to deal with if you're dealing with them one at a time. So, I mean, that's something against Kalia. If anyone's having a problem with Kalia, just make sure that you try getting her out of the game at least 5 or 6 times. More or less, Kalia has a harder time winning after that because it costs so much for her to come out after that.
Except that one game with Corey.
Yeah, well, Corey, okay, the one game we had with Corey, that was a crazy game. I think we ended up killing her like 29 times. Or you did.
Yeah, I kept on using Marath.
Here's the thing, and Corey's a special case with this. Corey, he's a very meticulous deck builder.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every deck he's ever built, and we did have a chance to play with him a while ago. He still shows up every once in a while. Corey's deck building strategy is not like everybody else's. He will sit down and actually really lay everything out and really think about everything he has to answer and make sure that he has answers to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he will just, for the answer to Kalia getting killed a billion times, I'm just going to play a bunch of mana rocks. Or I'm just going to play recursion and get around it. Like, he will look for the ways and really go through the meta and look at, well, what usually stops Kalia? Well, reanimation usually does, so I'm just going to add this. Or I'm going to have to play her a lot because they're going to kill her a lot. I'm just going to play a bunch of mana rocks and a bunch of mana doublers. And he thinks of that stuff. That's why his decks are so good.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just crazy because... And all of his, like, removal spells or destroy spells have a dual purpose.
Yeah.
Like, mortify.
They do two things.
Yeah, decimate. Although he doesn't play, like, a terror, a straight-up terror, or anything like that. They have to have dual purpose.
He'll dual purpose everything. And I think that's what makes him such a good player. And I remember back here at the house when he would play those cards. Everyone had a hard time dealing with his decks, and there's people that were upset about it. But I think just playing with him last time we played with him, I even made a comment to Corey, like, I know I lost, he ended up winning, but I felt really good at the end of that game because I think I matured a little bit as a player, where his decks weren't all that scary anymore. I mean, look how many times we took Jinjai Taxus out that game when he played it.
Yeah.
I think we killed Jin like 6 times.
Yep.
And he just kept bringing her back, and we just kept killing her again. But that was a really fun game. I mean, he ended up winning, but look how far he had to go to win.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up having to, I think, shuffle our graveyards back because me and Alex kept reanimating stuff. So we ended up having to go the distance and shuffle our generals and our graveyards back into our decks and then take an extra turn. That's the only way he was going to win, and he admittedly said, that's the only way I was going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Because you guys had answers to everything. I couldn't do anything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a fun game. I had fun in that game.
Yeah, it was like an hour and a half game, but yeah.
Everyone had board state at least 5 times.
Yeah.
I think I ended up playing Mortal Kombat like 4 times that game.
Yeah, it was something stupid like that. I
kept Mortal Kombat-ing like 4 times and just kept getting destroyed. But my answer to that was simply, you guys are going to run out of removal sometime, so I'm just going to keep playing it. Screw it. But yeah, that was a fun game. I mean, it was a great game. But let's see what else we have in here. Basically what we're talking about here is this article's really good. Like, Sheldon really puts everything out there. If you're an EDH player just getting in, don't let these big bomb cards bug you. Just get rid of them. Like, and I know we've repeated this a billion times, but the game's got to end sometime. Somebody's got to win. Just the best way to deal with these cards is just make sure you have answers to them. I mean, it's the best you can do. Each color has its strengths and weaknesses, but look for those weaknesses it has and look for answers with the stuff that you can play for those weaknesses. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not that hard. But I don't know. I think we beat it out pretty good.
Oh yeah, we beat this horse pretty far down.
But yeah, so basically we'll have the link up here for this article. So just look for it when the article comes out, and the whole article's here. It'd be really sweet to get him on the show. I don't know how we'd pull it off, but it'd be cool.
I mean, it's gonna take a little work. But
oh God, yeah.
I mean, I've tried other people, and I've been trying to get other people on the show.
Yeah,
and it's a little tricky because you might have to go through channels, and even if you do go through the proper channels, they might not want to do it. And it's not because of how they feel about the game or, you know, that. It's just that we're new still. We're still a little wet behind the ears of the show. And, you know, our credibility might be their credibility.
Yeah.
So.
That, and if they work for the company, which, for a fact, I know for a fact, Sheldon Henry, not only did he design the format, he also stands as pretty much head of the rules committee, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he still has control of the format he created, which I think is a good thing. Like, if I created something everyone was playing, I'd want to stay in control of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
But we really don't have any feedback this week. I had to edit the show because Nick was really busy this week, so no big deal. I tried to edit the best, so I hope everyone enjoyed it. If for whatever reason you don't like something, let me know. I'll try to fix it. I don't know. You got anything else to say?
Nope.
I don't either. But till next week, I'm Nate.
I'm Alex.
And this was Commanders HQ.